Have you ever had the experience of being on a boat out far enough in the ocean that you couldn't see land anymore? Maybe some of you great deep sea fishermen who have ventured beyond the edges of that which is safe. Maybe some of you who have journeyed on a cruise, which really doesn't count, because when you get on a boat that big, you might as well be on an island. Isn't it kind of an eerie feeling to be in a place where safety is obscured, where that which is stable and secure disappears, and you find that you're really pretty much dependent on something that may not be as comfortable as what you would like the good old dirt of Texas soil. You know, that feeling of losing sight of the shore is really the experience of the Christian life. That feeling of being displaced or in a place where security is not so secure anymore is normal for Christian behavior. See, the life of faith is a life of losing sight of the shore. It's a life of putting your trust in God, who may or may not allow the circumstances around you to be so secure, so settled. You know, when you look in the dictionary under the word security, there are three primary pieces of security that are pointed out in the dictionary. The first one is freedom from danger. A person is secure when they feel free from danger. The second one is freedom from fear. A person is secure when they feel free from fear. And the third one is freedom from want or need. We find security when all of our needs are met. And I believe that that's pretty much the goal of most of our lives. If we can find a way to structure our lives so that we have freedom from fear, we have freedom from anxiety or worry, and we have freedom from want or need, we pretty much have established that kind of life which makes us feel good, which makes us secure. The difficulty with that is that God continually comes into the picture to upset our security. Because God, in faith, wants us to move beyond our comfort zone so that we can find the life that He would have us lead. You see, the only real security for the Christian is the security that comes from God and following His way in obedience. The great example that we have of this is Abraham, and we want to look at him again this morning. Turn to Genesis chapter 12. We're in a study of the life of Abraham, and when we look at the life of Abraham, we find that Abraham is the ideal man of faith. His life reflects the life of faith. Now, as we look at him today, we're going to see him as the hero. But when we look at him in the next chapter, we're going to find out that he's not always the hero. The life of faith has its ups and downs. The life of faith has the good days and it has the bad days. But one thing about the life of faith is when we look at the life of faith in total, it's marked by a certain characteristic. And that characteristic is not security. It is not security. That characteristic is obedience. Obedience. You see, faith forsakes security for obedience. Faith forsakes security for obedience. Chapter 12, verse 1 of Genesis says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abraham went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took his wife Sarai, and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated, and all the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. And thus they came to the land of Canaan. And Abram passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Then he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on, continuing toward the Negev. Now here is the story of the call of Abraham. And we see in the call of Abraham that God asks something from him, which requires a significant movement away from security. We'll look at that in detail in a few moments. And Abraham responds in faith. He responds in faith and does what God asks him to do. That is the mark of the life of faith. It's leaving sight of the shore, moving out of the comfort zones of life, leaving security in order to be obedient and following God. Now, a few things I want to point out in the structure of this passage before we dive into the details. We see here in verse 1 and verses 1 through 3, actually, God is doing the speaking, and the Lord speaks twice in this passage. The Lord speaks in verses 1 through 3, God speaks, and then God speaks again in verse 7. And when the Lord speaks, notice what Abram does. Abram obeys. God says in verse 1, go forth. In verse 4, so Abram went forth. Same word. God says to do it, and Abram does it. In each case, when God speaks, Abram follows. Secondly, I'd like to point out in this particular structure of the passage that, first of all, God speaks to Abram. And then later on, he appears in verse 7. In other words, God gives him the smaller revelation early when the bigger test is required. When Abram's still at home and he's still secure, God speaks to him. When Abram does what God tells him to do and he arrives in the land where God has sent him, then what does God do? God appears to him. You know, we would think it'd be the other way around. You know, from a psychological standpoint, you think God would understand human nature better than that. You know, when he's making the big shift, you know, it seemed like God would pull out all the stops, you know, all the whistles and buzzers. He'd make a grand appearance to give Abram confidence that he could really go. And then later on, when Abram does what he says he would do, it'd just be a, kind of a pat on the back. Good job. He could just kind of speak from heaven. God doesn't work that way. God doesn't work that way. See, the faith issue is not dependent on signs and shows and displays. Oh, God, I can believe you if you'll do something really big to make me see you in a big way. Then I'll act. God merely speaks the first time. And then he responds to the faith of Abram by appearing to him the second time. As we look at this passage, we see that faith really in this passage is pictured as a journey. It is a journey. And it is a journey in three aspects. First of all, it's a journey away from the familiar. Faith is a journey away from the familiar. He tells Abram to go forth and to leave what? Verse 1, he says, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house. Everything that's safe. His country would be his land of origin. He was from Ur of the Chaldeans. And Ur was the place that he was comfortable with. The people there spoke the language that he spoke. The people there had the same culture that he had. It was a comfortable, natural place. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of traveling to a foreign culture and staying for any kind of extended length of time. A few years back, Terry Spinelli, our missionary in Moscow, and I had the privilege of going to Estonia, and we spent 2 weeks there, and we actually went before the curtain completely lifted, and it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. We got off the plane in Tallinn, Estonia, which was then part of the former Soviet Union, and the place was just incredible. I couldn't speak any language. I mean, what I could understand and what they could understand were so totally different. It was, you know, grunts and points. The letters didn't look the same. They weren't English. I couldn't read any of the signs. I couldn't find my way to the bathroom because there wasn't anything that would tell me where it was. And as I got off the plane and stood there looking at these Russian soldiers with their guns and not a real friendly look on their face, I realized that I was in a country that I was not comfortable with. Well, that's what Abram was being called to do, to leave his country, to go to a land that was going to be completely foreign to him. Different language, different customs, different styles, different ways of doing things. The business practices and traditions would be different. It would be completely different. God says, faith is a journey away from the familiar. Not only would he leave his country, but he would leave his relatives and his father's house. Those people who were closest to him would be the people he would leave behind. And today, we don't feel like it's any big deal to live in Texas and have our parents or grandparents live in Missouri or Kansas or California. But you got to keep in mind that when Abram was called to go, there was no AT&T. There was not an easy access back home to the people he loved. The mail carriers carried these cuneiform tablets around. And you can't carry much when you're traveling that distance. It wasn't like he was going to be able to keep in contact with his family. When God says, you leave your family, he was leaving them probably to never see them again. Probably to never see them again, or at least in the back of his mind. I may never see these people again. God was calling him away from the familiar. Faith is also a journey into the unknown. Notice the latter part of verse 1. He says, I'm going to want you to go forth to a land which I will show you. He did not know where he was going when he left home. He was going to a land that had not yet been revealed. The destination had not yet been located. If you look at Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 and 9, Hebrews chapter 11 makes it very clear that Abraham went forth journeying, not knowing where he was going. God said, go, and he left, and he went, and had no idea where that would be. Frederick Buechner, in his book, Telling the Truth, puts it this way. He said, they had quite a life, the old pair, talking about Abram and Sarai. Years before, they'd gotten off to a good start in Mesopotamia. They had a nice house in the suburbs with a two-car garage and a color TV and a barbecue pit. They had a room all fixed up for when the babies started coming. With their health and each other and their families behind them, they had what is known as a future. Sarah got her clothes at Dillard's, did volunteer work at the hospital, was a member of the League of Women Voters. Abram was pulling down an excellent salary for a young man, plus generous fringe benefits and an enlightened retirement program. Then they got religion, or religion got them, and Abram was convinced that what God wanted them to do was to pull up stakes and head out for somewhere where God had promised he would make Abram the father of a great nation, which in turn would be a blessing to all the nations. So that's what they did, and that's where their trouble started. They put their house on the market and gave the color TV to the hospital and got a good price for the crib and bassinet because they'd never been used and were as good as new. Abram wrote an eloquent letter of resignation to the president of the company and received an equally eloquent one in reply, assuring him that there would always be a job waiting for him if he ever changed his mind and came back. If he ever regained his senses and came back was the way the president expressed it in the first draft, because though he thought religion was a good thing like Social Security and regular exercise, he didn't think it was something to go overboard about like Abram, but in his final draft he settled for the milder wording. So off they went in their station wagon with the U-Haul behind and a handful of friends and relatives who, if they didn't share Abram's religious convictions, decided to hitch their wagons to his star anyway. And off Abram went onto his journey into the unknown. You know, if you have a destination in mind, when you follow God, you're probably going to have a bad trip. If you have your own destination in mind, when you set off in faith to follow God, you're probably going to have a bad trip. Because oftentimes, God does not reveal the end, the destination, when he calls you by faith to leave the comfort of your lives. Oftentimes, he just gives you an open door and says, you go, and I'll get you where I want you to be. Do you have a destination in mind? Have you got your life mapped out? Do you know where you're going? You see, if that happens, if you get to the point where you're so clear, God, my life has got to be this way. I've got it worked out. This is what I need. This is my security. It's got to work out this way. You'll fail in faith because God will not work the plans in the way you think they ought to be. God will work his plans so they'll be infinitely better than you could ever have dreamed. And the destination will be so much grander than what you would have ever believed if you'll just let Him lead. If you've got it in your mind, this God, this is where you've got to take me, and if you don't take me there, I'm just not going to be happy with my life. I'm just not going to be satisfied. Take me where I want to go. You miss the journey of faith. Finally, the journey of faith is into the impossible. Faith is a journey into the impossible. Notice God makes some promises to Abram. He says, I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. Now, I want you to underline two words in this passage. The first one is go forth in verse 1. Go forth. And then at the last part of verse 2, be a blessing. Be a blessing. Those are the two commands in this passage. God commands Abram to do two things. One is go forth, and number two is be a blessing. Now, the English is a little bit confusing as you read it, so let me help you understand how this flows. First of all, God says, if you will go forth, I will do three things for you. What are those three things? I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great. And then God gives the second command, do the second thing, be a blessing, and if you'll be a blessing, I'll do three more things for you. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Now the reason why that phrase in verse 2, and so you shall be a blessing, is confusing in the English, is even though it is a command, it's a result command. In other words, if Abram doesn't go, and God doesn't do these three things for him, then he will not have the ability to carry out the second command, which is be a blessing. But if he does go, which he did, and God does those three things for him, which God did, then Abraham has a second responsibility, and that is to be a blessing. You see, God didn't call Abram in faith just to have a great time. He didn't call him in faith just to have a great name, just to have a great family. You see, the call that God makes in the life of faith is to do the impossible. God does not just heap blessings on us just to make us happy. God does not heap blessings on us just to make us fulfilled, just to make our life wonderful. God heaps blessings on us in order to bless us so that we might in turn turn around and be a blessing to other people. Now let's look specifically at what God says He's going to do. First of all, God says He's going to make you a great nation. Now Abram's 75 years old and he's childless. He's childless. But He's going to make him a great nation. Number two, God says He will bless you. That is, He will enrich you. He'll give you everything you need to have a great life. And then number three, and make your name great. That means, Abram, you are going to become a very, very important person. Now, did God come through on those? Did He? Did God come through on those? How many Jewish people are there? How many Jewish people have there been over the course of history? Quite a few, right? Probably have some Jewish people in our audience today. Descendants of Abram. God came through. To this man who was 75 years old that didn't have any kids, God made him a great nation. Did God bless him? Absolutely. As we study the life of Abram, we'll see that his life was full. And did God make him a great man? Give him a great name? Sure did. Abram's respected as one of the greatest men that has ever walked on the face of the earth. A great man. God fulfilled His promise. So what was Abram to do? Be a blessing. God promises three more promises. He says, I will bless those who bless you. In other words, the people who hook up with you, they're going to reap the benefits. But there's a downside. And the one who curses you, I will curse. In the Hebrew, these words are different words. The first word is more of a light word, an easier word. It's to make light of or to make fun of somebody. He says, the one who looks down on you or treats you lightly, treats you with contempt, I will curse them. Has that happened? What of the nations who have mistreated Israel? What's become of those nations? When you look through the history of the world and nation after nation, going all the way back to the Babylonian Empire and the Medo-Persian Empire, going back to the Assyrian Empire and the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire, even up into modern times with the Ottoman Empire and Germany, the one who curses Israel, what will happen? I'm going to deal with those people. And God has done that. And finally, in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. There's the promise of the Messiah. Through the family of Abraham would come the one who would bless all of the earth. So God calls Abram to do the impossible, to be a blessing. And God gives Abram everything he needs to fulfill that. You see, the life of faith is a journey. It's out of the familiar. It's into the unknown to do the impossible. But God, coming alongside of us, takes us on that journey and takes us places that we could never imagine. I ask you this morning, what security blanket are you holding on to? What is in your life right now that's non-negotiable? I have got to have this, God, and I'm not willing to give it up for anything. What's your security blanket? What's the thing that keeps you up and drives you, that makes you pound the table when you think about it, that wakes you up at 2 o'clock in the morning? It's something you've got to have, something you're striving for. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's something financial. Maybe it's a position or a promotion. Maybe it's recognition. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's a sense of a fulfillment or of peace. And you've got to have this at all costs, and it's driving your life. What is that? In the life of faith, God may be calling you to let go of that, to give up the security, and to pursue Him in obedience. We see that Abram does that. In the last few verses here, we see that Abram's response is the model of faith, because the life of faith is, first of all, overcoming circumstances through obedience. Abram overcomes incredible circumstances. Look at verse 4. So Abram went forth, as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now, Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. How many people at age 75 are willing to make this kind of a change? How many people at age 35 are willing to make this kind of a change? This guy, when you look at his circumstances, you'd say, no, Abram, a younger man, maybe. Maybe a younger man, but not you. Look at your circumstances, man. You can't do this. Verse 5, and Abram took Sarai, his wife. No way, Abram. The woman is not going to have a baby. She's not going to have a baby. There's no way. It's biologically impossible. Can you imagine Abram trying to explain this to people? God's going to make me a great nation. Now, what if a 75-year-old came to you with his wife and said, my wife's going to have a baby. God's promised me that. What would you say? You know, we know better than that. That doesn't work. Circumstances would say, don't try this. Don't try this. It doesn't work. Let's read on. And all their possessions which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for Canaan. And thus they came to the land of Canaan, and Abram passed through the land of Canaan as far as the site of Shechem to the oaks of Moreh. Now the Canaanite was then in the land. Now how in the world is this going to be your land, Abram? You got a problem with the deed here, buddy. The Canaanites own this property that you're calling your home. Now, how are you going to possess the land that doesn't belong to you? Circumstances would say, no way. I mean, you can't do it. It's impossible. There's no possible way that you can own the land that belongs to somebody else. It just isn't going to happen. Look at all the circumstances of Abram's life, and you'd say, there's no way that this can happen. God's made a promise to you that'll never work out. You know, that's when God is at his best. When we question whether God can be trusted or not, that's when God does his best work. You see, God's promises are always more secure than our present circumstances. God's promises are always more secure than our present circumstances. You see, the Canaanites are going to disappear off the face of the earth. It's going to take 400 years for that to happen, but they will be gone, and the land will belong to Abram. Not only that, but Abram's wife is going to have a baby. And you know, it's so funny by the end of the story that they name the baby Laughter, because it's such a joke that a woman this old can have a baby. So the word Isaac means laughter, because it's the greatest joke that's ever been played in history. And Abram is going to live a long time past 75 years. And you know, he's going to be out fighting battles against five kings in a couple chapters in his 80s. All of the circumstances that would say there is no possible way that this could happen, God is going to overcome those circumstances in the life of Abram. We see the life of faith is overcoming circumstances through obedience. And not only that, but Abram doesn't just go there to survive. Abraham goes there aggressively. The life of faith is also building altars on pagan soil. Abram is going to stake his claim to a land that doesn't belong to him because he's got so much faith in God that he's going to do it. Look what happens. Verse 7, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." By the way, this is the first time Abram knows that he's in the right place. He's finally here, and God says, he appears to him and says, this is it, guys. This is the land. I'm going to give this land to you. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Abram builds an altar. Verse 8, then he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And then he journeyed to the Negev. Now it's important to note that these two cities are key cities in Canaan. They are at the north, south, and east-west crossroads of the land. The Oaks of Moreh is a pagan shrine. And he goes there and he builds an altar to God there. Then he travels to Bethel and Ai, and he builds an altar there and establishes at the north, south, and the east-west crossroads of the land that this is the place where God is going to be worshipped. Here is a man living in a tent, building permanent places of worship in a land that does not belong to him based on the promises of God. Notice also that his faith is so strong, he doesn't just build an altar. He talks about it. In verse 5, there's an interesting phrase. The persons which he had acquired in Haran. Now, these are not slaves. The word for persons here is the Hebrew word nephesh, which means souls. He wasn't acquiring souls, or slaves, he was acquiring souls. When he was in Haran, he was telling people that Yahweh, God, had appeared to him and told him that he was going to bless him and everybody associated with him, and people began to believe his word, and they were going with him. He was gathering a congregation of followers who worshiped God. Then in verse 8, when he built the altar, he called upon the name of the Lord. The word there, called, was translated by Martin Luther back in the 1500s as preached. I think that's an accurate translation. He wasn't just calling up to God, he was proclaiming the attributes of God around this altar that he built. He was teaching and preaching about God. Now he goes into the midst of the pagan soil of the Canaanites to proclaim God to the people. You see, the life of faith is not just acquiescing to the plan of God, it's aggressively promoting the purposes of God. It's going into the face of circumstances that appear to be absolutely hostile and being willing to take the promises of God and proclaim them to the people around. And that's Abram. You know, oftentimes I wonder, are we really receiving an answer to prayer when God moves Christians in next door to us? Is it really a blessing when everybody in my office is a believer? Why is God sending Abram, his key guy, into the hotbed of paganism? Why is he doing that? Because he wants the pagans to know about the promise that's been given. See, God is very, very interested in the Canaanites. And he's going to preach the gospel to them through Abram. The life of faith is losing sight of the shore. And part of losing sight of the shore is recognizing that we're called into a hostile pagan world with a wonderful message of salvation that must be proclaimed. And it's kind of pushing off of the security of some of the Christians that would hold us so close and being able to go out and venture into a pagan world and proclaim so other people can hear the good news too. Everything about faith is scary, you know it? Everything about faith is risky. Everything about faith is tough. Except for God. And God is always good. He's always reliable. And He always provides exactly what we need. when we need it to fulfill the life of faith. See, God's call on each of us to lose sight of the shore, to push off into the unknown. And I don't know what the situation is for you. You do. I don't know what He's calling you to do. I don't know what He's challenging you in, but you know. And you can sit there and look me in the face today and know there's an area in your life, there's something in your life that's secure, and you're holding on to it with everything you can. And God says, let go of that, because I'm going to take you on the journey of your life. It's the journey of faith. And if you'll just say yes in obedience to me, you'll go places you've never gone before, and you'll do things you've never done before, and you'll see things you've never seen before, and it'll be scary, and it'll be hard. It'll always be good. It'll always be good. Faith forsakes security for obedience. And the great men and the great women that have done great things for God have been those who are willing to say, God, whatever you want, that's where I'll go. Wherever you take me, that's where I'll go. And the journey will be up to you, in your control. You know, as we look back over history, I think one of the greatest displays of that kind of faith came right in the founding of this country. When this country was established, there was a group of men who, in faith, believed that God was leading them to do something that was going to cost them all the security in the world. In the documents that framed this nation, we find these words: with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Remember those words? Listen to the commitment. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. The 56 courageous men who signed that document understood that this was not just high-sounding rhetoric. They knew that if they succeeded in what they were attempting to do, the best they could expect would be years of hardship in a struggling new nation. If they lost, they would face the hangman's noose as traitors. Of the 56, few were long to survive. 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, and occupied by the enemy or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army. 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 out of the 56 died in the war from its hardships or from its bullets. Whatever ideas you have of the men who met that hot summer in Philadelphia, it is important that we remember certain facts about the men who made this pledge. They were not poor men or wild-eyed pirates. They were men of means, rich men, most of them, men who enjoyed ease and luxury. These guys had security. They didn't have a problem paying the stamp tax. They had the means to do it. That wasn't the issue. They considered liberty much more important than security. And they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honors. And they paid the price. Throughout the history of the Christian church, we've seen the same thing. Men and women who would follow God, leave security in a life of faith, and just do incredible things for the kingdom. How about you? How about you? Are you the kind of person who has the faith to forsake security in obedience, to go on the journey of your life with God at the helm of your ship? I encourage you this morning, don't be afraid to lose sight of the shore. When God's driving, you're out for the race of your life. Let's pray.